You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The song went triple platinum, which is pretty insane when you think about it. It's Shay Fu with Fade Away from The Navigator, which is 20 years old this year. It came out in 2001. And Shay Fu is going to be celebrating that anniversary as part of the Auckland Arts Festival on the 13th of March at the Town Hall with a whole lot of musical friends. And I was very lucky to have a chat with Shay just the other day, asking him about his reflections on this album 20 years on and what's been going on for him musically at the time and also at the moment as well. So let's have a listen to that conversation. This is Shay Fu speaking to me 2 days ago. This is a pretty big, exciting gig to be playing 20 years of Navigator.
Ooh, yeah, when you say it like that, it is a significant one for me, yeah.
I was going to ask you about some of your reflections on the album 20 years on, but one of the amazing things about Navigator as a record is it's kind of never really gone away. It's always there in our kind of cultural psyche. So maybe a better question to ask is, what are some of the ways you feel this record's grown with you over this period of time?
I guess in terms of playing live, it's definitely a strong one in terms of the reception from the people and that. So it's obviously resonated with a lot of cats,
yeah.
Which I'm really appreciative of. And it's a record that I've been regularly playing live in various guises. So I rock with a DJ sometimes, and sometimes I rock, I DJ myself,
yep.
And other times, at the best times, I rock with my band, and so Navigator is a big part of our set. Yeah.
Hard out, yeah. When you put this record out, what was the context that you were kind of like making music in? Because this was still like a very kind of like burgeoning time for Aotearoa's hip-hop scene in many ways. Like the 90s had been so fruitful, but this was still kind of something new for New Zealand. What was that sort of context for you?
Yeah, for me, in context to what I was up to and my mind space at the time, it was the second record for me. And so with that in mind, I felt really confident in terms of the recording process and just the whole general crafting of an album. In my career, up to that point, it was like my third album, because I'd done my first album was with Supergroove, and so the second one was I guess my solo sort of venture, and this was my second one doing it by myself. And I felt real comfortable in the studio. I felt real comfortable in terms of being able to tell the engineer what I wanted. And I had a real sort of clear vision for the album. So in that way, it was really awesome and a real good time. Musically, in terms of what we were doing, I still felt like we were doing new things in terms of the way that we were creating our hip-hop sort of vibe. Stuff like, you know, bringing in the DJ mixer and putting instruments through the DJ mixer. I mean, the engineer had this real sort of awkward look on his face when he saw us, like, putting RCAs into a keyboard and then into a Vistax mixer. And so just being able to have that sort of playtime in a real big flash studio was really awesome. And so in terms of that hip-hop creation, it was really, really fruitful.
Was this after you'd spent some time in New York, or was this before you'd done your little New York stint?
This was way after. I spent a lot of time in New York just before, to be specific.
All right. Yeah.
And so I guess one of the big sort of differences in regards to be specific and The Navigator was the fact that I'd really done a deep dive into the recording process. So I got myself a Mac and had a Pro Tools LE in my house, and that was, I guess, I was one of the first guys to start doing that. I mean, it, obviously it's par for the course nowadays for home studios and for that sort of thing to be going on now. But back then it was kind of new, especially amongst my group of friends. And so that whole thing was a big step up for me, and which definitely helped me in the when I got to the studio and I was able to tell the engineer exactly which frequencies I needed to be lifted and whatnot. And so in that way, it was really a good time.
I think that's such a cool thing as well, especially when you've had an album like To Be Specific, which did have this like huge cultural resonance with people, but then coming into your next record with confidence around the technical side of things, it must be a pretty awesome thing as a young guy kind of walking into that space and being like, I've got my friends with me, I know what I'm up to, I know what I'm writing about. It must have been a really kind of empowering time.
Very much so, and a lot of fun. So, I mean, I guess on the back of To Be Specific, I'd been given a lot more resources and a lot more control. So in that way, it was a lot more fun. So, I mean, I was able to, like, use Serato in the studio, and Serato was still brand new back then. And at that time, they'd only released a version of Serato where you needed a Pro Tools LE to actually control the audio.
And you had one.
Yeah, and I had one. So that was the difference. So those cats, so we actually formed a real good, strong relationship through that process of doing that record. And I did a song called Remember to Forget on the third album. But at that time, doing The Navigator, I was doing stuff that was a little different, you know what I mean, at the time. And so that was a lot of fun.
Really cool about what's happening at the Arts Festival this year is there's this huge celebration of 50 years of the Polynesian Panthers, and obviously your dad, Tingi Ness, was a huge part of that founding crew as well. Do you think growing up in and around that context informed a lot about what you write about?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, my father and my mother's sort of life and works were definitely a huge part of my upbringing. Also, the fact that my dad was a functioning musician since the 70s also obviously spurred that sort of energy musically for me. Politically, I guess indirectly it influenced me. I mean, growing up going to marches and so forth, it sort of, I guess, allowed me to look through things through a different lens, I guess. And I noticed that more so when I would mix with other kids who weren't from that sort of life. As I got older, it definitely provided me with fodder to write about more easily And so I didn't have to like strain my mind to think of any sort of issues to start speaking about. So when I started writing my own rhymes, it was definitely an easy marriage. And in particular, my first track, Chains, was basically everything I'd thought about up until that point all squashed into one song. In hindsight, it might not have been the greatest idea, but you know, when you're young, you're just full of energy and you just want to put all your best thoughts into your first sort of go at things. And that's what that was, and it was definitely a culmination of my parents and how I was brought up.
Is it true that you wrote the hook on the fly for that track?
Thanks for that. Yeah Yep, that's true. Yeah, it wasn't the toilet. Yes.
Nice.
Yeah. We're all great songs. Yeah. Toilet, the shower, same thing. Yep.
How was that collaboration with DLT? Because that was such a like formative time for you both. When you look back on some of those really early relationships that you had, do you still see like through lines to where you are now as a musician?
For sure. I mean, I still connect up with Daryl now. I mean, I just spoke to him the other day. And he was a huge influence on me, a mentor, you know, not only musically, but also as a young man growing up. Those relationships are still strong till today. I think those relationships also still form a lot of the stuff that I still write about now. Yes, folks, I'm still writing. Not putting out much, but still writing. And he was definitely a big part of that and others, and I'm real thankful to be able to still be working in this place, in this country. One of the best things about working around here, I mean, there's pros and cons. I mean, we're not like a huge market or industry, you might say, but I tell you what, we have the best times when we do these massive festivals that we're lucky to be able to be doing right now, because for us musicians, it's just a massive good time and a big hangout session.
Yeah.
So in that way, those relationships have definitely been able to be stronger for the fact that we're from here and we have that sort of culture here.
Yeah, totally. When you look at the hip-hop scene that's coming through right now, there are some really hearty artists coming up right at the moment. What are some of the things that I guess stick out to you about what's currently happening with this younger generation coming through at the moment?
I can definitely see a real high level of craft work going on in terms of just the holistic look at things, in terms of like back in my day, you just write raps.
Yeah.
That was it. You wrote a rap, you needed music, you went and saw the DJ. Now everyone's a rapping DJ.
Yeah,
now
yeah,
everyone's like hands on with social media, with doing their videos, their static artwork, and so forth. And I think that's just part and parcel of being a musician from Aotearoa. We're usually a jack of all trades out of necessity, not so much because we want to, but that's just how you got to get it done here. I mean, there's not like a massive industry or microcosm of industries, such as in the States, you'll find like there's a massive video making industry, there's a massive engineering industry in terms of sound and so forth. Whereas here, it's so small that you kind of have to do it yourself for the most part, which is all good. It makes us a different type of beast.
Yeah.
But and in that way, the new hip hop artists are definitely of that ilk, and so they're multifaceted. I have to say, when I look at these young cats, it's pretty dope.
Is there anybody in particular that you've got your eye or your ear on at the moment, and you think they're doing something pretty sick?
Word. I've been listening to Sweat It for a minute. Mm. I really like those guys. Just the whole package sort of thing. They look pretty clear on what they're doing. I really love their live sets and just how they bring the whole sort of humor to the fore, and they represent Polynesia with the seriousness that I really commend. Mellow Downs, Murdering It. Yeah, all the young fellas that are coming up are just storming it. I love it.
And if you could, I guess, like wave the magic wand for I guess, hip-hop in Aotearoa, what would you like to see? Because we're at this funny point at the moment where all of the, you know, stresses and outside factors of 2020 has meant that we've had all these conversations about what happens to the arts, what happens to music when we have something like a pandemic hit. What would be something you'd like to see maybe come out of this hard time? What's the silver lining for you?
Shucks. I mean, I can only speak for myself. There was definitely obvious cons and pros to it, but the ability to lock down and focus in on myself and just being a parent, being able to focus on my family was really good for everything, and that's music included, I guess. So in that way, it was definitely a good learning experience. I'm glad that we ended on a positive note. Thankful to the powers that be. We're living in a place where we can still get out and about and to be able to look at the other countries in this world. You know, you just gotta be thankful. Why? You know what I mean? And so in that way, the whole sort of pandemic and lockdown thing in terms of music and what I want to see is just, I guess, just more music, just more content. There's a lack of it globally, and so we're in a lucky position where we can, I guess, provide something for that void. And so I guess I just want to see a continuation of what people are doing in terms of their writing and stuff. I expect to see more content out there, and just the live scene, man. Like we have the ability to have one, so just I reckon, yeah, let's kick it on and still keep that live scene happening. We're very, very lucky, as anyone can see, who's had a squiz at any social media lately. We're real lucky to be out here playing, and so just a continuation, I reckon. Yeah,
absolutely. Hey, thank you so much, Shay. Oh, it's been such a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Any last shout outs, anything you want to say?
Yeah, man, if you want to come check us out at the Auckland Arts Festival March 13th, that'd be great. Come see us, man. It'll be a good time. Yeah, we're all looking forward to it. Yo, peace out.
That is, of course, Shay Fu with Misty Frequencies. It was such a pleasure to speak to Shay about reflecting on 20 years of Navigator, which is celebrating that anniversary this year with a huge show at the Auckland Town Hall as part of the Auckland Arts Festival. That is on the 13th of March. Tickets are so decent for this. It sort of ranges between $19 to $69, depending on various things, concessions and where you sit and all that jazz. But it's not a gig to miss. It's going to be pretty special. You can find details about how to get tickets through the Auckland Arts Festival website. And there's going to be a whole bunch of awesome people supporting Shay as well. Team Dynamite will be playing, Ruby Doo, DJ Manuel Bundy, and a few other people popping up throughout the night. So make sure you do get a ticket. It's going to be pretty magic, I think, one to remember. Also, Tingy Ness, Shay's dad, is going to be doing bits and pieces around the Arts Festival this year as well. It is sort of celebrating, one of the major themes that's happening with this Arts Festival is celebrating 50 years of the Polynesian Panthers. So there's a lot of really cool programming around that too. So if you jump on the Arts Festival website, you can find out more about all of that. It was such a pleasure to chat to Shay. So thank you once again, Shay Fu. You're on BFM. We're going to be back after this.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.